Hey gang, how are you? Happy Thanksgiving week. Kevin Goatee here, gutting the sacred cow. And guess what? We actually managed to find Casey St. Ange, who hates Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the Thanksgiving movie of all Thanksgiving movies. Before we get to it, hey, why not do us a quick favor? Go on over to that little, you know, YouTube or wherever you watch us. Actually, YouTube is the only place you can watch us. Go to YouTube and just smash that subscribe button. We could really use the help. Appreciate that. And if you want to drop by and say hello, hello, on the old socials, Gutting the Sacred Cow is on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Tumblr? Yeah, we are. And guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com if you want to drop us a line or want to advertise with us. We love to help you build your brand or help sell your product. And without any further ado, good luck, Casey St. Ange, about the take on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You're going to need it.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kind of like it, yeah, it's trending right now. Yeah, that doesn't matter, cause we're gutting the sacred cow.
That's it, buddy. You tell that turd who's boss. Kevin Israel, name that film.
Austin Powers.
Oh! Is that two in a row?
When it's quotes that I've actually like said or used or repeated, I'll get it. That's an easy one.
Who does number two work for?
See, I thought that was one that was a little off the beaten path because the obvious ones, obvious, it just, it, you know, it's rote. No, thank you. But this one's like, maybe. But
let people know them. Scatological humor will always get me.
And that's why you're my work wife. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, how are you folks? Here we go again. Another week, another episode of Gutting the Sacred Cow. This week, we are joined by the lovely Casey St. Ange. Casey, how are you today?
I'm well. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Casey, why don't you start off by telling everybody what you're up to, where we can find you? We have to do plugs in the beginning.
Oh, sure. What am I up to? I co-host the podcast Busy Phillips is Doing Her Best with Busy Phillips, who's an actor, as you know. She's my creative partner. When I'm not doing that, I'm a television producer and comedy writer and just a nice person.
And that's the important part.
Yeah, that last part I can vouch for. The other two, I have to look at your credits and then see if there's anything.
Anything good? Anything you might have seen? You know, just a lot of TV shows.
That's awesome.
Make a lot of TV shows and have been doing that for a really long time. Probably since you were maybe even born. I don't know how old you are.
Oh,
maybe.
Look at you. She's flirting, Kevin, because we're older than we look.
That's flattery. I feel like I look exactly as old as I am.
Yeah. Do you? Maybe. I don't know. If you produce Three's Company, then maybe.
No. All right. Well, I didn't, but I did enjoy Three's Company.
Who did it?
If that gives you a window. But yeah, and then where can you find me? I don't know. All the places. Twitter, where you guys found me.
Right.
Instagram.
Casey has decided to target a film. Kevin Israel, I thought this one was on our bulletproof list, as a lot of other films that we thought were bulletproof, but people just have tried to assail these films. Casey has decided to tackle the Thanksgiving film of Thanksgiving films, and that is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. 1987, a budget at the time of $30 million, a box office gross of $49.5 million. And I forgot to translate it into 2021 money, but the all-in money, box office gross, $70.7 million haul in 2021 money. So there we have it. IMDb is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. Hey, Casey, why don't you try and take a stab and tell me what you think that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles scored on the old IMDb?
Wait, it's a scale of 1 to 10?
1 to 10 with decimal points.
Probably something Like 8.9.
8.9. Kevin Israel, how about you? What do you think it scored on the old IMDb?
7.8.
7.2.
Okay. All right.
Rotten Tomatoes is a 1 through 100 percentage based score. Kevin Israel, the critics' Rotten Tomatoes score, if you please.
85.
Casey St. Ange.
Rotten Tomatoes, I feel like, is newer than IMDb, but I also feel like Rotten Tomatoes is mostly scored by white men. So I feel like it's a wash. 75%.
Critics have given this a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
White men representing, coming in strong.
Casey, why don't you take a guess and see what the audience gave that film?
I feel like the audience is similar to the critics in their feelings. So I'm going to say like 89%.
Kevin Israel.
See, I think this, I would have guessed this is higher audience than critics. So I'm going to go 95.
87.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
This one's for Rennie.
Quotes. We'll have better luck playing pickup six with our butt cheeks. How you doing, Dell? I'm a million bucks short of being a millionaire. Larry Bird doesn't do that much ball handling in one night. You know what I need? Know what? I tell you what you need. Another hand and a second set of balls. That's a great one. Where's your hand between two pillows? Those aren't pillows.
That's the one.
Uh-oh, what? You're fucked. And here's actually this one off the beaten path that jumped out at me. I've never seen a man picked up by his testicles before. You're going the wrong way. How do they know where we're going? Kevin Israel, quotes.
I mean, you just reenacted the whole movie.
Pretty much.
This one hit me because I've said this to people before or something like it. You're not even amusing accidentally. and this one, which you followed up with the response quote, but we've all felt this way at some point. I want a fucking car right fucking now.
Casey, how about you? Any quotes that jumped out at you?
The one that honest to goodness made me laugh is when they're in the back of the truck and Steve Martin says, what do you think the temperature is here? And John Candy says, one.
That's good. Any other quotes you have or no?
No, I don't. Okay. No.
That's fine. No, that's fine. Now we're going to our new favorite segment, which on Twitter, of course, every Monday when we tape or whenever we tape, you can go to, of course, GTSC Podcast when we post our Ask a Gutter.
Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter.
Bango 2331 asks no questions for Casey. Just shocked someone can hate this film. Actually, I checked that back. You know what? I do have a question. Which host between Kevin Israel and myself is who is who in the infamous pillow scene? He wants to know.
That's not fair. She doesn't know us well enough.
Oh, this is all pure gut reaction.
I feel like Kevin G is Steve Martin.
Oh, I'll take that. I'm the big spoon. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, it's Kevin's going to have a heart attack and die in his 50s. So I'll take that as I'm still alive.
It means I'm nibbling on your ear, Kevin. Enjoy it.
I'm not complaining. Did you hear me go, ugh, gross? No, I did not. Next question. John D at Jaylee D's. Wow. If there was ever a perfect buddy comedy, this is as close as you're going to get. I'm curious to hear the rationale. My question is, do you think, Casey, you could beat Kevin Bacon in a foot race through a New York street?
I most certainly could not beat Kevin Bacon at that age. in a foot race through the New York streets. I couldn't beat him now at his advanced age now. And moreover, I wouldn't race Kevin Bacon. I would just let him have what he's chasing after.
Oh, well, apparently you're a big Quicksilver fan then, if you went to
let him go footloose.
Yes!
Oh, look at you. Yeah. That was, mine was good. Yours was better. Our buddy Lord Snurts wants to know, hey, Casey, who would you cast if the movie was being rebooted today?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I would cast Ron Funches maybe as Del Griffith. And for Neil Page, I would cast, oh my gosh, that's a really, Kumail Nanjiani.
Mm-hmm. They are doing a reboot. You know that, correct?
Are they really?
You ready to hear this?
No.
Will God. Smith and Kevin Hart.
Okay.
Don't okay. No. It is not okay. Well,
it makes sense.
No. I hate reboots. That's my, unless it's
you hate reboots.
Give me a good reboot besides Dread. I'll wait.
especially about a character driven reboot. Like this movie only existed in my mind because of these two guys, the two actors. So you're taking a movie that was based around these two comedic styles and now trying to just give Kevin Hart and Will Smith an original comedy.
Right.
And I could see the pairing of the two of them working.
Right.
But why not just make a whole new movie?
Right.
Well, that's the thing about reboots, right? They're about like familiarity and an audience that's already there and IP that companies own. And then you're trying to put a fresh spin on it. But it very often is not really anything like the original spirit of the movie or whatever. Obviously, it's different actors, different performers. So yes, it would make more sense probably to do, because reboots seem to just often anger people too, because they want to see a continuation of what they're familiar with and what they love. And unfortunately, right, that's not possible in this case. But it makes sense to me that Will and Kevin would do a reboot of this.
It doesn't surprise me. That casting doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But it kind of disappoints me.
Or they can
the two of them.
Or they can do another buddy comedy film where it's not under the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles banner. It could be something completely different because my only rule of reboots is this: unless the original sucks, then don't reboot it. I.e. Judge Dredd Blue. Dredd was amazing. Most of these other reboots, Point Break, RoboCop, they were all fucking perfect. No, the original.
The reboot. Yeah.
I will not waste time watching the reboot because the originals are amazing. Next one we have from Goldust27. I've never seen it, but judging by the synopsis I just Googled, I'm glad. Sounds like a bro version of Christmas with the Cranks. Well, Simpy Goldust27, you are so viciously wrong. Next.
Christmas with the Cranks.
Yeah. What? Bro version? No, I'm not buying that. Our buddy at Newark Night, Brandon Oglesby. Wow, I thought this movie was too wholesome to gut, but I guess not. Do you like John Candy's comedy, Casey, or do you think it's mostly nostalgia?
No, I love John Candy. I think that this movie was not a good vehicle for not only John Candy's talents. I think everybody's talent was wasted in this movie.
All right. Well, don't get into the whys yet. That's for your section. But now we're going to get into our other favorite section. That is five fun facts.
Five fun facts, 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 five fun facts.
Did you know John Hughes used to be a copywriter for an ad agency in Chicago? Well, this movie is autobiographical because he was supposed to be on a 5 p.m. flight home on a Wednesday, but winds canceled the flight to Chicago, so he stayed in a hotel, then was delayed again when snow hit Chicago. The plane he got on was diverted to Denver, then Phoenix. John Hughes didn't make it home until the following Monday.
Wow. Poor John.
He wrote this lightning fast, by the way. The first, I think he said, first 80 pages, 70 pages were done in 3 or 4 hours. Number two, the crew brought treadmills, weights, and exercise equipment for John Candy and stashed it in his hotel suite. Steve Martin said he didn't use any of it. I say, I'm not shocked.
Yeah. That's insulting and stupid.
Yes. Number three, there is a 3-hour cut of this movie laying around in the vaults of, I think it was Universal or Paramount. I forgot which studio. There's a 3-hour cut laying around, which equivocates to 600,000 feet of film, or as I call it, 1/4 of any Judd Apatow film.
I knew it. I knew that was going to end a Judd Apatow punchline.
Well, now I'll never make a Judd Apatow long movie joke. Just they're bad. Number four, Steve Martin joined the film for two reasons. One, the seat adjustment scene in the car, and of course, the F word tirade at the rental car desk. Now, this is one of my favorites. Who are the first choices for this film? Kevin Israel, Casey, I'm going to give you one. All right. Two of the four three of the four were big names in the 80s. The fourth, you'll be surprised. But two of the four were absolute. You can say, yep, I can see it. And the two I'm talking about, A-listers in the 80s. Take a guess. I'll let Casey go first.
A-listers in the 80s?
Huge.
Mel Gibson?
You say that so painfully. No.
Because he causes people pain.
Well, that's, yeah. not in 87. He was too busy doing Lethal Weapon.
True.
Not Chevy Chase. The first one, Tom Hanks was, but he was too busy filming Big, which we just
okay. did.
Yeah. And John Goodman was also considered, which I would think would that be a good one. The yeah. other two names that are a little off the beaten path, Rick Moranis, and also considered at the time box office poison is John Travolta again, who also was considered for Big. So that's hilarious. And also
I could see Rick Moranis as Steve Martin's
guy. 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
And John Goodman being Del yeah. Griffith.
Yeah.
And that does it for five fun facts, Kevin Israel. It's time to let our guests shine. It's time for this TV producer to see if she can make that leap in the film and see if Casey St. Ange cannot gut
the
sacred cow.
Wow, guys. Okay, so let me first say that I've seen this film a number of times over the years, mostly not by my choice, accidentally, but in preparation for this podcast, I watched it two times because I wanted to make sure I wow. hate it as much as I thought I did, and I still do. So I want to start out by saying I'm incredibly loyal to John Hughes. I love John Hughes films. That could be why this one hurts so much. I will also say, because you guys don't know me, we're just meeting, I do hate a plot that just centers on things going wrong. Like, it's just, I hate it. Because I think it always results in, you're not going anywhere creative. Nothing surprising usually ever happens in a film that hinges on just a list of things going wrong. So with that being said, I want to love this movie. I love every single last person that's in this movie. And as I said earlier, I think it's a poor showcase for all of their talents. I think they were all wasted. I think you get a little taste of how funny Edie McClurg is, but that's it. That's it. She has like one kind of killer delivered line, which you quoted in your quotable quotes. You're fucked. So let's like just jump into it. Start at the beginning. Steve Martin is a dick. As Neil Page, he's a dick. He was inconvenienced. He was made to stay late at a meeting that was scheduled 2 days before Thanksgiving because, poor guy. He's like an advertising executive and he had to stay and sit quietly waiting to earn money and then try to rush home for Thanksgiving. And I'm just like, he was already overly impatient and angry right from the jump. So he's upset because he wants to get home to his family, but he's being rude to everyone else. He's rude to his colleague at the back of the office. He's rude to the flight attendant because his ticket's messed up. A nice guy, a nice man who loves his family and only wants to get home to his family, I feel like wouldn't be so peevish with everyone that he comes in contact with ever. Anyway, also, Neil Page, you fucking planned poorly for right before the holidays for getting home. Like, that's, you're trying to make a last minute flight two nights before. You know you live in Chicago. You know what the weather is like in Chicago. You know it's the 1980s and you don't have cell phones or the internet to fix your ticket up when it gets messed up. So just like, it's poor planning on your part. Then John Candy, who plays, I guess, the hero of the film, Del Griffith. Nobody is that stupid, gross, or inconsiderate. Nobody, nobody. When he takes his shoes and socks off in the plane, that's fucking disgusting. I get it that it's a joke, but there's literally entire, like, social media accounts dedicated to shaming people that behave in this way.
One second, Casey. Sure. I'm going to give you a hug because I agree with you. I think people who take their shoes off on plane are monsters and need to be put in steerage if they take their shoes off. Flip flops, I'm fine with because they don't have.
I don't even like that.
No. Nope. Well, I'm a flip flop guy, but my feet don't. But first of all, this when you have the socks come off because they have that smell just sitting there. You've been up for hours. Then you get on the plane. Then you take off. Then it just unleashes the smell. At least the flip flops, they're already aerated and there is no smell.
Let me just to be fair, I told you what I hate. I hate feet more than anything in the world. Like when I was pregnant with my children,
I
was gonna say you guys should have dated.
When I was pregnant with my sons, I would almost black out when I would start to think that there was feet inside me. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't handle it at all. And so I don't like any flip-flops and I don't want to see anyone's feet. Not if we're dating, not if we're nobody's feet. And I sure don't want to see John Candy's feet, even though I love him. The thing that I'm the biggest fan of in this entire world is the musician Prince, and I don't even want to see his feet ever. And I love that guy a lot.
So you don't watch many Quentin Tarantino films, then it sounds like.
No, I have to like cover my eyes. I'm not even joking. I don't even like, I'm grossed out that I'm talking about feet right now. So anyway, then, you know, he steals the cab from Neil. And like I'm saying, nobody's that much of a bumpkin. He's in New York City. He lives in Chicago or wherever. He lives in the Chicago suburbs, I'm assuming. So, you know, he should be a pretty savvy guy and he's being played like he's just has no idea. I did like the taxi driver Doobie when they got to that first, when they had to get to that first hotel room. Mm-hmm. But I have to say like, and listen, I'm not saying that I didn't laugh at these jokes in the 80s, but I think now you have to acknowledge that a gay panic joke does not hold up. So when they first get to that motel room and he's like, do you want to take a shower? And he's like, no. And they're like, he's like, no, not together. Ha ha. I'm not propositioning you in a gay way. Like those just don't hold up. So, you know, we have to acknowledge that. The quality of jokes in some movies has risen. The bar has risen and that one's below the bar. He's taking his shower. The water goes off. Fine. That happens in a motel. So that's like mildly inconvenient. Then he gets out of the shower and he sees that like all the towels are wet and the floor is wet and it's like disgusting. But that's just like lazy, poor filmmaking. How could he have gotten in the shower without seeing that the bathroom was in a repulsive state? Why is that a reveal and surprise to him when he gets out of the shower? Mm-hmm. So for me, that's like not the best writing. There aren't a lot of jokes in the movie itself. It's more of like personality based gags, as you were saying. Even when you were saying like the best quotes, I was like one of these is mildly amusing. It's like a half a joke. So like, for example, an example of like a personality gag when they're in bed together and Del starts like, and he's like, you know, I have to clear my sinuses or I won't be able to. I'm like, what is like, that's not a joke. You know what I mean? It's not a hard joke. It's just like this guy, he has an annoying personality. He keeps being annoying, you know? So then he's with his sinuses. Okay. It's a joke. I guess that's what constitutes a joke in this movie.
Well, I think it also just sets up where when Steve Martin erupts on him, like,
Okay,
he does.
Snorting all that, it just builds up, and he just kaboom, like a volcano blows up. I think it kind of plays important to the recipe of why he loses his shit.
It does, which I will say, that also kind of plays into something I want to talk about, which is, like, again, even the writing that's non-joke writing is a little, like, you talked about how quickly John Hughes wrote this. I think that is clear, and I think he also maybe didn't take a second pass at it, because some of the stuff is like Steve Martin erupts on John Candy and says, "How'd you like a mouthful of teeth?" That's not a thing, but we all already have a mouthful of teeth. It's how would you like a mouthful of fist, or would you like a mouthful of broken teeth,
right,
or what? But I'm like, John Hughes, like, just take a second pass. Like, first thought isn't best thought. You know what I mean? I will say this, during that moment, they're cutting back to John Candy and his cutaways where he's clearly like getting emotional and tearful. That is some good dramatic acting by John Candy. But Steve Martin, I feel like, was being misused, and he was so mean. He was being so, so mean that it was more uncomfortable than funny, but not uncomfortable in a way that, like, sometimes you have to get something good. So it's interesting when you said Rick Moranis was considered for that role, because I was really thinking, like, trying to put myself in that position to think, how would Rick Moranis have played differently in that scene? I feel like Steve Martin's have a point speech could apply to this movie. Like, I think everything he said about Dell and what Dell should be embarrassed about is also true of this movie. But it is a good dramatic scene by John Candy. And then it swells into that, like, 80s ballad where Steve Martin, like, realizes that he went too far and that he's, like, not being a good person. And that did kind of make me laugh, even though it was not intended to make anyone laugh, but it did make me laugh because it was so cliche. But then we're, like, at the next morning, and again, this is the poor writing. Steve Martin goes in to, like, wash his face in the bathroom that was disgusting last night after he, like, realizes that he should be nicer to Del. Del's a good guy at heart. He goes in to wash his face in the bathroom and then smells his hands, and he's like, "Oh, what's this smell?" And then he looks down and the sink is full of socks. How could you fucking wash your face in a sink and not know it's full of socks, Steve Martin?
Fair point.
This movie is full of unearned reveals, and John Hughes is the king of comedic reveals. If you think of, like, Home Alone, it's full of them, and they're legitimately funny, surprising reveals, but he's doing all of these reveals where the character should have known that shit to begin with, and then he, like, tops it off by, like, wiping his face with John Candy's disgusting underwear, which he also should have seen and known by the texture of his hands. Wasn't a towel, but on his hands, yeah, whatever. There's another gay panic joke again, where they're, like, wake up cuddling, which, again, we just have to acknowledge that we know better now and we do better. And then they realize when they're at the diner that they've been robbed. How could you not know that you were robbed? Wouldn't your room door be open? Wouldn't the chain be broken?
It's in my notes.
It's in your notes. Yeah. I mean, it's like it could have. This is what I'm saying. In a second pass, maybe you think of a more clever way. Maybe you think of a more clever scene that happens with the robber, that they, like, battle a robber together. I will say, at least the robber was white, so we weren't leaning into any racist tropes even back then, which is good. That's a positive, right? I want to give credit where credit's due. But then Neil, like, calls his wife again, and she's just, like, waiting at home, like, eating toast sadly, and, like, it's perfectly peaceful there, and she's like, "Where are you?" And he's like, "I'm still on the road." And I'm like, here's the thought that I had. It's so calm and so peaceful. They have three children. That is not what it's like to be home alone with three children at all when your husband's on the road. The existence of this movie disproves in the cinematic universe, or is disproves the right word? You guys tell me. The existence of this movie negates the existence of the movie Mr. Mom. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, if that's the way kids act when your spouse is away from your house, then Mr. Mom should have never been a movie, because nothing entertaining would have happened at home with Michael Keaton and those kids. But that's not like, it's like the day before Thanksgiving. She needs to be putting those kids in the car seats. She needs to be pissed off when her husband's calling. She needs to be out trying to find stuffing at 57 stores, not just like home sadly eating jellied toast. Like, where are you, honey? That wife is such a thin character that it's just, whoo. And that's like, obviously, I'm a woman. These things are meaningful to me. John Hughes did a lot of amazing female characters over the year. This movie is like devoid of, like, it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. It doesn't pass the, like, does this woman have any thoughts that don't revolve around Steve Martin test? And that's like, I think every woman that's actually in the movie all has to do with, like, what's happening with Neil Page. So anyway, Mom.
Listen, but to be fair, it's not about her. It's about two guys who meet each other on a trip. The wife is so far removed from the main story.
Yes.
Why does she need to be a focal point? I'm having a hard time with
that. That is, to be fair, yes. But I will say this. As a woman, I like to see a version of myself reflected on screen, and I lose interest when I'm not, because it's not about anything that I would be thinking. Or so that could be why I've never liked the film. Like, to be fair, it's not about half of the world, so don't worry about it. You know, do you understand what I'm saying?
So, but then at the same thought, if you see an Avengers film, I don't think you're echoed in any of those heroes and their traits. So it's not about you either, but I'm sure you like the Avengers films, or maybe another one like those films where it's not you being represented in that film.
Listen, this is weird to be saying to two guys, but everybody else has taken such a backseat to, like, entertainment that is geared toward guys and revolves around guys. And so now that we've improved on that a little bit, you really notice it, and that's all you can see. So I'm saying, like, throughout my life, I maybe couldn't put my finger on it, but I'm like, there's not, like, one funny lady in it. Like, you know, like I said, Edie McClurg, like, touched on being funny for, like, 1 second in that movie. And I think it is one of the funnier lines of the movie. But yeah, for the most part, like, it's just like, it's kind of, I don't know. I think that might be an issue for me, is that it's just two guys. And I'm like, well, okay, guys, Godspeed. But anyway, going on, they didn't know they were robbed. When they're in the diner, this is a part that, like, really bugged me, but it was like a good note about the writing, which, by the way, John Hughes is a wildly successful writer. I've not written a wildly successful film, so take all this with a grain of salt. I'm just telling you what I think. In the diner, when Del says, "We were robbed," when he goes to, like, look for money, and Steve Martin's rejoinder, Neil's rejoinder, is, "Do you think so?" in a stupid voice. Like, that's like my mom says that to me when I say something obvious. That's like what a bully dad says to his kids when they say something obvious. That's not, like, sharp or good.
I don't want to be discombative with you, but put yourself in his shoes for just a minute. You've just been robbed. And even though the setup that you just said of how they didn't realize it is stupid, fine. Just take that out of the equation.
Yeah, yeah.
If you found out you just were robbed and someone says something like, "What you got?" Wouldn't you come back with a smarmy ass fucking response? I know I would, because I lost my keys today. No one came across me, and I had to serve them the fucking business for asking something stupid. But you're in such a shitty place, you just can't help but have a fucking assy response to somebody going, "You know what? Let's not ask dumb questions. I just lost a lot of money. I lost my credit cards. I lost all this shit. Let's fuck off." And, you know, for just You're going to have that natural reaction. I can.
This is all true. This is all true. And I'm arguing for like realism with like these bathroom scenes. I'm like, how could this dumbass not know that the bathroom was disgusting?
Right.
But like, it's a comedy. So like, what is the point of like responding in a realistic way instead of taking that heightened opportunity to land a really good joke, a really good blow that closes out that, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a missed opportunity. Again, it feels very first drafty to me. It's like when sometimes I'll work with comedy writers that are like maybe a little bit older than me. And then they're like, you know, somebody will be like, I'm not sure this joke works. And they're like, what if we say blah, 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 not. And I'm like, ooh, it's time for us to put you down.
No,
not to
beat the scene to death. I'll give a different take than both of you.
Okay.
I thought it was going somewhere completely different. I thought, because he had just gotten done accusing Dell of stealing the money.
Yes.
And then Dell opens his wallet and goes, oh my God, my money's gone too. I thought it was going to be like, oh, really? You lost your money? Isn't that convenient? I thought he was going to continue with the whole, I'm accusing you of stealing, and now I think you're just making this look like you're also a victim.
Right.
But he immediately was suddenly like, no, obviously we were both robbed. But a minute ago, you thought he robbed you, so I thought it was too quick of a change of his assumption. And the audience was running with, oh, I see. He's going to think he's robbed. He robbed him, and now there's going to be an exchange. And then suddenly he was like, yeah, obviously we were both robbed. I was like, was it obvious? Because a minute ago you thought he robbed you. So that I thought that's where it was going to go, and it was going to end up into like a funny exchange about him being like, no, I don't have any money either. I thought it was going to go a whole different way.
If you're going to rob somebody and then try and go, oh, I got robbed too, you'd probably shove all the money in your sock or a hidden compartment in your suitcase. They could have, you know, another.
That's where I thought it was going to.
Yeah, I'm picking up from you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha. I'm with you.
But that journey, which if you haven't seen the movie in a long time, remember he gets dropped off in the car rental parking lot. They tell him to go to space V5. The bus drives away. He goes to space V5. There's no car. So he has to like walk back to the airport, and it's like a, you know, it's a real journey. It's 3 miles, according to him. And it's, he falls down a snow embankment, whatever. That whole scene, I was sort of like, could anything funnier have happened here? Like, what is the LOL part of this? Like, I guess he slides down the little snow embankment and he falls. But it's also like the second time there's a gag where like Neil's stuff gets run over. In the beginning of the movie in New York City, his briefcase gets run over. Here, his hat gets run over. And I'm just like, is this what people were like busting a gut over in the 80s? Like someone's belongings individually being run over the course of 2 days. And so it's just like, that's again, another opportunity. That's again, like another opportunity just for like a better written gag, in my opinion, a second or third draft, maybe they would have cracked it. I will say that when he shows up in the airport, finally, I do like the sight gag of him having the tie tied around his ears as like earmuffs. That was funny. That was funny, and funny enough that it made me wonder if Steve Martin like improvised it and thought of it like on the fly, because,
Well, he's the same guy who also had an arrow, fake arrow through his head while he didn't stand up on stage. So I'm going to say yes.
He loves a good sight gag.
It was a simpler time.
Simpler time. But it did make me laugh. And I was like, it was humor level out of character with the rest of the movie enough where I was like, oh, he must have just thought of that because it probably wasn't in the script. Edie McClurg is superb. She's superb in everything. So she has like a really small role as like the lady in charge of the rental car company. And she's like a little annoying, but I love how she turns the tables on him and is like, you know, because it's true. If your car wasn't there in the rental car parking lot and you in anger whipped your rental agreement across the parking lot and didn't bother to go get it, then I would delight as a car rental agent in telling you after you'd cursed me out that you were shit out of luck and not getting a car. I think we've all seen a fella have a tantrum like that, and it is I'll say it's funnier in real life than it played out in the movie. I think it's funnier to see a guy lose his shit in real life like that and then get his comeuppance and have someone tell him. It reminded me of my dad, God rest his soul, with our lawnmower over the years. That was exactly what Steve Martin was doing. It was like he studied a film of my dad. One of my favorite writers, Adam Resnick, used to say this, and he wasn't a writer there at the time, but he used to say this thing about, like, there is the rule of three, but there's also this thing where you can continue to beat the dead horse until it's annoying to everyone. And then it gets, if you can stick with it, if you can gut it out, it gets funny again. It does. Well, I promise you.
I'm going to disagree, because there's this little film called Napoleon Dynamite that did that and it never got funny because that film fucking stinks.
Oh my goodness. So anyway, well, I think it is true at times that you can repeat something enough that it's funny, but I feel like if they had done the head almost getting run over joke at least three times, I would have been able to say, well, that was intentional and not lazy. So maybe in that 3-hour version you mentioned, there's more footage of Steve Martin almost getting his head run over, but two times I'm kind of like, that just seems like you couldn't think of anything else and you did it again. There's that scene where the car goes between two trucks and they have the nearest near death experience. And then it flashes on, like, it cuts to like scenes of them as skeletons, to shots of them as skeletons. And then as John Candy as like the devil laughing in Steve Martin's face. And I legitimately thought that was funny. It was absurd and wild and, like, you know, representing like your life flashing before your eyes. It was kind of weird to me that they put an absurdist moment in the movie. Did you guys think that was weird, or were you like,
I thought it was par for the course. I thought it fit the motif perfectly.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. It didn't really occur to me one way or the other. This was another scene that I thought was gonna go a completely other way. I was sure they were gonna, something was gonna happen. Really ended up happening, and I thought they were either gonna crash into something or the car was going to explode. So I thought something was going to happen, but then once they go through the trucks and the car just spins around, it stops. I was like, oh, that's it. So I think I was more focused on what didn't happen rather than that moment. Cause I remember seeing John Candy as the devil, but I don't think I was thinking about it because I don't remember the skeletons. So I clearly wasn't paying attention.
Steve Martin has this like moment where he's laughing and Del's like, what's so funny, you know, and you can't tell if it's like literal hysterical laughter, and he's like, it finally happened to you, you finally did something horrible to yourself and you're never going to be able to return this rental car, ha ha ha. And John Candy admits that he's rented the car with Steve Martin's Diners Club card that somehow ended up in his wallet. And I'm like, okay, at that point, you are a criminal. You're a fucking criminal. Like, all your annoying peccadilloes, all the things like taking off your socks and washing your socks, all of that could be just chalked up to being like unself-aware. But at that point, Del committed a crime. He committed fraud. And so it also negated that whole moment we were talking about earlier, Kevin, where he was like, I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a thief, you know, where he like swore up and down he didn't steal the money. He might as well have stolen the money because he committed fraud with his friend's credit card to rent this car. So, well, my final opinion is like, it's like a 2 for me. I think that,
oof.
I think that Neil has just like classic anger issues that are not fun to watch. I think he has shit to work out with a therapist, and, you know, he supposedly loves his family, but he like doesn't see them and he's only home on the holidays. And it's like, what if you're such a dick constantly, how fun is it for your family to have you around, like being a dick? That's what I wonder. Or I'm like, is he one of those guys that's really nice to his family, but a dick to everyone else? That's not great either. Del, I think, is like, he has very sad life circumstances, but I also think he's manipulative. He's a borderline abusive scammer. I think his physical pain comes from emotional pain that he has over the loss of his wife, but he needs to work on that instead of just getting it all over everyone in public. He needs to, you know, he needs to figure that out. I estimated that I think the trip probably cost Neil around $35,000 in the end, trying to get like in 1987 dollars. That's what I'm like, between like crashing into a motel and destroying a car and all.
He didn't pay that. No. He fled. He did not fucking pay that for those hotel repairs. He died and ditched is what he did.
He fled, but would the hotel not be able to track it back to him?
No, how could they?
They just gave the watch.
That's it. And there weren't any cameras outside. That was not a high.
No, I feel like they had the license plate number of the rental car, which would be traced back to Neil, and he's gonna end up paying for the motel repairs. He gave up his great watch. It was expensive. Let's say $15,000 to $35,000. It costs.
Yeah, the car costs Neil. The car alone. Yeah.
The car alone is enough. Unless
he had walk away insurance, then he could say fuck all, like they do in the Jackass movies. You go, guess what? Walk away. That's too bad.
Do you think Dell insured that car when he was renting it with Neil's card?
Here's the thing. When you have a credit card, you don't need car insurance. Like when they go, would you like to have rental insurance? Nope, because I have a credit card that everything would ever happen.
Do you think Diners Club covers damages?
I never had to rent a car with Diners Club.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's like a library card, basically.
Hilarious. Fantastic. All right, so you give it a 2 out of 10 then. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Not a fan. Let me just before we go to Kevin Israel, I just want to know, you said John Hughes films. Give me your favorite John Hughes film so I just don't know where we stand here.
I love Pretty in Pink. I love 16 Candles. I love the Home Alone movies. So, you know, I mean, I love The Breakfast Club.
See, I hated Breakfast Club and we did Pretty in Pink on this podcast and I hated that.
Okay.
And that had issues, you know, especially 16 Candles with the, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm surprised that you like that, but you have a problem with some of the things that were done in this film.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm saying, like, I think we have to acknowledge again that we like know better and we do better. There's a lot of problematic shit in 16 Candles, a lot of problematic shit in Pretty in Pink. Also just like Ducky's a super annoying character. And
Napoleon Dynamite.
I would 100% get a restraining order against Ducky if he was my friend in high school. And yet it somehow entertained me.
Listen, he grew up to be a UCB rapist, a sex pest. I promise you that. That's Ducky. And it's funny because it's probably true. Just kidding. Kevin Israel, why don't you lead off this one and let's hear your notes.
So this, shocking to Kevin Goatee, was the first time I've ever seen this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Floored me. This is one
of those movies that people would start like talking about and I just go, yeah, oh yeah. Like when people talk really in-depth football, I just like, yeah, sure. Oh, I get what you're talking about.
You fraud, you.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm a lawyer and I pull it off. So I went into this with really no expectations. Also, in full honesty, I'm not a huge John Candy fan. I never was. I'm sorry. I just not.
No,
sorry.
That's okay.
And so I wasn't going into this with I've also never seen Uncle Buck, which I know is also Kevin Goatee. It just was never my kind of comedy. So I went into this. I do like Steve Martin. I think Steve Martin's done some really funny things. One of my favorite scenes in movie history, and it's not a great movie, but is when he's in Pink Panther when he's trying to say cheeseburger. I think that's fucking hysterical, and I can watch that over and over again. Sorry.
Never saw Pink
Panther. I've never seen the whole movie. Interesting. I've just seen that scene.
Just that
and
scene.
I think that scene is hysterical. Anyway.
If you love Steve Martin, I don't know if you've ever seen Bowfinger, but that's my favorite of
I hated Bowfinger.
It's so funny.
I hated it. His best in my book is The Jerk, without question.
The Jerk is also, yes.
Yeah, The Jerk. There we go. So anyway, I went into this movie with no expectations. This movie, and I have to agree with Casey on this, I hate comedies that rely on two things. One, pure mishaps, and two, stupid people and assholes. And this movie combined those two. And the entire time, it was just like, okay, they're on a train. Something's going to go wrong. They're on a plane. Something's going to go wrong. They rented the car. And I was just like, I've seen the picture. So I was like, I know the car is going to end up in shambles. So for me, it was, and then like Casey said, Casey took a lot of the words out of my mouth. Like Steve Martin was just an asshole. And he never evolves really past just being an asshole. You just kind of have that moment at the end and you're just supposed to go, oh, okay, it's all nice now. And John Candy's character goes from being kind of a dumb asshole to being like a dumb, redeemable, funny guy to being an asshole who steals credit cards. So it's almost like, what is his character and what is Steve Martin's character? There are funny parts. I disagree with Casey on the point that there were points in the movie where I laughed, but I laughed at it like I was watching an SNL skit. Like each little there, the funny parts were like little encapsulations that I didn't need to see tied together. Like the whole thing with the seat. That could have been an SNL scene. That was an SNL scene. That whole scene with the car was an SNL scene. The scene on the bus with the guy with the two people making out and them watching, which is just disgusting to begin with. Just being on a bus is disgusting. And then thinking about having sex on a bus is horrifying. And then the whole thing with the feet and Kevin Gotino's, and I've just met you, Casey. I hate feet too. I think it's disgusting. I think focusing on feet is just horrible. So when he took his shoes up and he's just in socks, I was like, he's obviously going to take his socks off. Then he took his socks. And I was just like, it's filthy to me. It's just disgusting. I also think eating in bed is horrifying to me. Eating and smoking and then smoking in bed. I had a friend who used to say, my favorite thing right before I go to bed is to smoke a cigarette. And I was like, you are basically disease. Like that's horribly disgusting. And then he sits and smokes and eats in bed and it's all over the bed. And I just want to, it makes me feel gross right now just thinking about it. So it's like they took like all these horrible things and added it up and made this character of Dell. But then at the end, you're supposed to go, oh, but I like him. And I didn't. I didn't like Dell at the end of this. I did think it was a nice twist. And kind of like you were saying that the John Hughes likes these little twists that his wife was dead. I saw it coming.
Yeah.
But the minute he said, I haven't been home. And then Steve Martin was like, why not? And he goes, because I'm a traveling salesman. That was Chekhov's gun. He said something. There was no resolution. So clearly that was going to come back. And I was like, his wife. And I thought it was going to end up, because again, I had no idea. I don't know anything about this movie other than it's a comedy about, you know, a comedy of errors. Right. And so I thought maybe it was going to turn out that he like either killed them or it was going to be something horrible. I thought maybe it was going to end that he was a horrible person, a serial killer or something. And Steve Martin, like I really saw this going a bunch of different ways and it never did go any of those ways. I thought, and I also started thinking that him being this shower curtain salesman, shower ring salesman, I thought that was going to pay off to something else. Like he has this kind of ridiculous job where it helped him get all these relationships. And I thought in the end, I mean, they did kind of do it where he was selling the stuff to make money.
Yeah.
But it never turned. I thought it was going to turn into something cheating bigger.
People.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, I thought in the end, like somehow Steve Martin was going to need something and he was going to be like, oh, well, I have all the shower curtain rings or like something. I thought there was going to be some payoff of that. It never went there. I will say this, and you guys both harped on this, and I'm going to make myself look like an asshole now. This is the robbery scene, and you were both like, that could never happen. Well, I was in Miami with a buddy, and we both passed out in our room after a night of drinking. I was on spring break. And somebody broke into our room and stole all of our shit. And then the next, like all of our money, our wallets, or my buddy's camera, a watch of mine. And we woke up the next morning and it was literally, I mean, now that we didn't accuse each other, but it was literally that scene where we were like, started looking for stuff. And because you never go there. You never go to, we were robbed. You go to, I must have misplaced it. Or like, did I lose it at the bar? And we started to go. And then he was like, my wallet's gone. I was like, my wallet's gone. And then he was like, my camera's gone. I was like, where's my... And then we actually went to the security office and we watched on camera the guy go into our room and he was in the room for an uncomfortably long amount of time. So I don't know what else happened.
But... Was he tonguing your earlobes too?
Yeah. Oh my, he was washing his socks.
Yeah, right. And yeah, it did happen. Now, we were also very, very drunk and passed out. So
right.
I'll give myself that credit. But
I have a question. Was this a shitty hotel room?
No. No, it was a very nice hotel.
So two questions about that. A, is there in room safe? B, is there a security latch above the actual handle?
I mean, we were going back 27 years right now. So I don't exactly remember 24 years. Oh. But if there was a safe, I can tell you what, we came home so drunk. We wouldn't
have thought of putting our stuff
in the safe or I don't know about latching it. I'm sure there was some kind of something or other, but it was a hotel. It's a long story, but the hotel, it was a specialty hotel that catered to models and celebrities. Cause my buddy's brother was a model. So he got us into this hotel and like, it's not a hotel that you can book normally. You can't like, it's not, you couldn't just walk in and get a reservation.
I need to know everything about this hotel, which we'll do on another podcast.
Honestly, it was really,
it was a Red Roof Inn on Collins Avenue.
And we were like 20, just like normal looking doofy college guys. And everybody there was just painfully stunning. And like everybody knew the joke, like we weren't supposed to be there, but anyway, so it can happen.
Oh my God.
Is my overly long point.
I'm glad you were okay.
Thanks.
Izzy.
So, you don't know what scars I carry.
I do want to say one thing before we wrap up. There was one part of the movie that I found extremely funny. It was right at the very end where Neil finally comes home on Thanksgiving Day and his entire family greets him at the door, and he brings Del inside after learning that Del has nowhere to go on Thanksgiving. And Neil's wife, Susan, comes down the stairs and he looks up at her and she looks so horny. It's like right there on Main in front of the, like, I'm sure she was trying to convey like absolute love, but it just looks so porny and horny, his wife. And then he's like looking up at her and I'm like, oh, all the in-laws are there and Del's there like squeezing his hat. And it's just like, she looks like she's ready to go and she wants to maybe.
Well, did you guys,
Neil and Del.
I had the DVD in and I had the deleted scenes. She starts rubbing her clit on the stairwell next to everybody.
That's in the 3-hour version. Yeah. It's so weird, but it's like she looks like a 1980s video vixen coming down the stairs and it's
you're 100% right. And in the 80s and then the later 80s and into the 90s, there was this thing they did, and I don't know why, but they did overlighting on people. Where people always had this halo of light around them. I don't know why they thought that was a good look, but she came down and she had that halo of light around her as she walked down, and she was dressed all like, I don't know, not like you would be on Thanksgiving. And I thought I was like, who's that lady? And then I was like, oh, that's his wife.
That's the wife. And I was just like, she looks like she is about to just rock out in a Whitesnake video and writhe around on something.
She's going to Tony Katane the fucking place up.
Yeah. Just like all in front of the kids and God and everyone.
It was a rough couple days. The last thing I'll say is I agree with Casey also. The wife was a little underutilized. It definitely wasn't about her, but I thought it would have been funny if she thought something else was going on. I thought the first call he made and she's like, why are you in Wichita, wherever he was?
Yeah.
I thought she suspected he was having an affair. And I don't know why. Maybe that's just the mistrustful person I am, but I thought that's where it was going to go. And then I thought there was going to be like the side plot of her trying to prove that he was having an affair. I made this whole movie into something else that it wasn't.
And they need to hire you on the Will Smith, Kevin Hart movie so that they don't.
It'll be a totally different movie.
John Hughes movies are not multifaceted, Kevin. Shame on you. Well, for thinking it has many layers.
I know. But I was expecting something else from the wife, like while kind of like in Home Alone, where the parents are going through this whole kind of other adventure trying to get back home to him while he's, you know, I thought that's where it was going to go and it didn't.
It's called a B story, John Hughes.
Ooh. Yeah. I would have liked a B
story.
That's
mean. That's mean to say to John Hughes, RIP.
He's not. I was just going to say, he can't hear you. He's dead.
So, I mean, gosh, yeah.
So I don't know how I would have felt about this movie if I saw it in the 80s. Maybe I would have liked it a little more, but there were some funny scenes. I get the quotes. I get why some people liked it. For me, like I said, I can't stand a movie that just rests on a comedy of errors and stupid people. I don't like Dumb and Dumber. I know. We agree on so much, and yet
so far away in other things.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I guess, and I didn't even know this was a Thanksgiving movie. Like, I didn't know this was like the Thanksgiving movie. I feel like I've been living some other alternate reality life where I didn't know about the whole cult behind this. But anyway, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. And it's nothing I'll ever rush to see again. So for me, I'd give it a 4.5.
These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com, where you find every day some blog articles, some cool stuff like that doesn't happen, where we watch movies like this one and we pick out things that just don't happen, that screenwriters try and pretend that do happen in real life, as well as other ones. Trailer talk. This week, we talk about the Morbius trailer. And of course, one of our other favorites, the quote section. And more merch than you can shake a stick at. It's hoodie weather, kids. It is hoodie weather. It is cold here in the Northeast. Hoodies, hats, bags, mugs. guttingthesacredcow.com for all your merch needs. And while you're at it, write a 5-star, 2 or 3 sentence review on the podcast platform in which you listen to us. Notes. We've all been in meetings where that drags on, where the department head just shuffles their feet. So I feel for Neil. Kevin Israel, you were in that same boat not even a week and a half ago, where your boss kept dragging on and delaying our start to our podcast. Did you notice the dad from Ferris Bueller's Day Off is in the opening scene in the boardroom? Yep. I sure as hell did. First, that doesn't happen in this movie. It takes place 3 minutes into the film, where Neil is waiting in line on Park Avenue for cabs. To all you folks who don't live or work in New York City, no one waits in line for cabs on the street. You try and snake people by standing up or down the block. The only place there are cab lines at Madison Square Garden or the airports. No one waits in lines. That doesn't happen. $75 to bribe your way into a cab in 2021 is batshit. In 1987 money, that's sanitarium insane.
But he was a lawyer.
Yeah. Running down the right lane of Park Avenue is a surefire way of getting clipped in the hip by a bike or car. He gets to the airport at 5:58 for a 6 p.m. flight. That's even beyond horseshit pre-9/11. Steve Martin's son has a penis haircut. Did you notice that? I did. I asked the two of you this. Who has a better laugh in film than John Candy? I thought so.
Julia Roberts.
No, David. Nope. So, you like when horses neigh? That's fun. Do you want to see me go in full berserker barrage? Take your shoes off in an airplane next to me. Watch the knives come out on me. I'll stab you with those plastic butter knives. Ben Stein in another John Hughes film. John Hughes is the original Judd Apatow, just a lot funnier and a lot shorter films. The cabbie who picks him up from the airport, did you know who that was? That was Billy Madison's lawyer buddy. Crazy Carl.
That was a great car. That cab was the best cab in movie history.
I want that car, yeah.
But now people will go, that's problematic with all the porn attached to the top, you know.
Porn in it.
Yeah. Well, not porn, but chicks in bikinis and such.
Yeah.
Another 10 more years before Kevin Israel is smoking on a Vibra bed in a robe.
You know what? I didn't say it. I've never been in a hotel to see a Vibra. I feel like a Vibra bed was invented by a screenwriter. And it was just like another screenwriter. You've seen them? I've never seen one.
Yeah, I've seen them.
I think they existed at one time, but it's one of those things like that people just love to, like, you know, nobody carries around a jug of moonshine with three X's on it either, but we see it all the time.
And their eyes are X'd out when they're drunk.
Yeah.
What grown man wears matching pajamas?
A cute one.
Do you, Kevin Israel, have matching
PJs? And you know what? One of us needs to write a that doesn't happen about it. Because in movies and TV, people always come out in pajamas. I know women typically have like pajama sets that they might wear. My wife sometimes has some things that she...
Yeah, mine too.
I don't know any guys who have pajamas.
What does every guy wear
to bed? Other than my dad. My dad sleeps in pajamas.
Does he have the cap, the cone cap with the little feather ball that falls to the side?
He might as well. But I feel like...
Does he have a candle he holds like this as he walks up the stairs to bed?
Ebenezer said, Bob Marley was dead. Dead as a poet.
Who doesn't throw every single lock in a hotel room the second you shut the door? I do, especially the top latch. That's the first thing I check before going to bed. That's where I go, this, you're ripe for doing that. So, and my buddy, I learned through my buddy who got rolled in Vegas, met some gals and brought him back, got drunk, and they robbed him blind. Got his watch, got like a lot. He had a Rolex and he had a lot of money. I throw all my shit in the room safe. I don't care how drunk I am. That is the first thing. I am fastidious in doing that. I always go right to the safe.
Could have my money clip. 1997.
I know you could have. Woo! My watch, my money clip, all of us, all if I'm with a buddy of mine, we throw all their shit in the safe, lock it up, and then we have to latch the door. We're very secure people here. The motel clerk sends his kid to give him a ride to the bus station. Why the fuck is he bringing his wife and kids if you're driving a pickup truck and you're picking up two dudes? I get it for comedy sakes. Yes, they have to ride in the back so they can have the shot with the dog gnarling at them and freezing their ass off. But I question that nonetheless. I don't care. You're going to the airport. Why do you need to bring the wife and kid? Leave them home. You got two guys. Okay. You get the point. Not enough people on that bus look like they have DWIs to be on that bus. That bus should be... Thank you. That bus should be a rolling Narcotics Anonymous meeting, not just, you know, people all bright and cheery. I could have saw this film in 35 minutes. Why not just get a rental car the minute the airport says flight's closed and get a rental car and just drive the fuck home? That's the first thing I would have done. Why not get a rental car and drive home instead of sit with people who think camping is a vacation? Gross. I haven't taken a bus long ways like that because A, I'm not on the run from the law. But I can imagine that people are going to viciously make out on a packed Greyhound bus. That sing-along shit on the bus would immediately cease if I was on. If you're on a Greyhound, no one wants merriment and cheer. You're all here because you fucked up in life. And there's no time for singing happy tunes when you should just be like, you know what? Let's just have a moment of introspection and go, this is why you need to make better choices in life. So I'm not on a bus.
Flintstones is a very catchy song, though.
It is.
I think it's also really difficult to sing song, like as hard as the Star Spangled Banner. So I had to give them some respect for doing it.
Who puts their wallet in a glove compartment? That's nonsense. You might as well hang a giant neon sign around John Candy's terrible mustache that flashes. Something is going to happen to this wallet. Get ready.
Yep.
I asked my co-host, who is the car expert? Not me. How do you put out a car fire with no fire extinguisher nearby?
You know, and none of that would have happened. The car wouldn't have driven.
Well, that was my next point. And how the hell does a car that was on fire have the ability to start again?
Yeah.
We're going to end my discussion with one hell of a fact doesn't happen. The very end, when Steve Martin's talking to him in the platform in Chicago, subway doors stay open for 10, 20 seconds max. Those doors would have shut on him. Or someone would yell, get the fuck off the train. That doesn't happen. By the way, Dell's wife looks like Marcy from Married with Children.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Think about it. There you go, Kevin. The helium earrings part. Do they not know how gas works? Earrings don't levitate because they have a lighter, noble element of gas in them. Just saying. By the way, that's
scientific.
Mr. Wizard over here.
Well, I have here and once in a while. By the way, that's not the house from Home Alone. I thought it was at first. I had to Google, but that house is one town away from the Home Alone house. Oh. That being said, John Candy is the epitome of a 500 batter. He either hits an absolute grand slam or he strikes out viciously. Strikeouts, including Breakfast Club, terrible. Pretty in Pink, terrible. 16 Candles, not caring for it. I can't remember the other ones. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a grand slam. Uncle Buck is a grand slam. And this, too, is a grand slam. You're both wrong. This easily passes the remote test. I don't care. It's absurd. I understand why you don't like the plot circling around a bunch of nonsense. I get it. The jokes are hilarious. I still laughed out. The part where he goes, well, you don't need anyone. Another set of hands, another set of balls. Like, I'm fucking laughing. I love John Candy is so infectious. He's great. Steve Martin is such a dick. But you know what? Put yourself in his shoes. The man just wants to go fucking home. And all these comedy eras happen. Yes, of course, the coincidences of that, the likelihood of that, you know, the same as Kevin Israel's, you know, nose hair growing 5 feet per second or whatever. I just couldn't think of a good one. I get all that. The jokes are there. Yes, the plots are always light in John Hughes films. This film, forget nostalgia, it's still funny. The jokes are still there. 8 out of 10. Classic still.
I'm glad you made your last point. So the grabbing your balls, whatever that whole exchange was, I thought what John Candy said was funny. The problem for me was they never showed Steve Martin grabbing his balls or doing anything like that.
Right.
It was just this random non sequitur that he was like, "You grab your balls a lot," and I was like, "Does he? I haven't seen him do it. He hasn't." Yes. That wasn't teased at all. So when it was like, "Oh my God, he does," or if there was like an accident where it looked like he was grabbing his balls for him, for John Candy to be like, "You're always grabbing your nuts," and it was like, "I wasn't." It was a funny response to a completely nonsensical statement within the bounds of that story.
I hear you. I'll just play devil's advocate. Would you want to see him grab his nuts 2 or 3 times in this film and go, what the fuck?
I didn't want to see a lot of that shit.
Right. It's almost like when you have a twist that had no
pretext.
There was no teasing of what actually happened.
Kevin, to your point, when they were having the argument over, did you take my money? No, my money's gone too. He said, you went in my stuff last night. You went in my wallet to get pizza. And
oh, right.
I was like, we didn't see any fucking pizza.
I guarantee you that was cut. That must have been filmed and that was cut because I thought the same thing too.
Not that we needed to, but then they had to like do all kinds of exposition like it was an episode of CSI when the medical examiner is like, this is the windpipe where the wind goes down. I'm just cutting open the
trachea.
Where's iced tea when you need them?
Yes.
Let's see what those critics thought in our critics 5-star reviews.
Critics 5-star reviews, critics 5-star reviews, critics 5-star reviews, critics 5-star reviews.
John Hughes, the master of adolescent angst, has finally grown up. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is a hilarious comedy without troubled teenagers. It is honestly one of the finest comedy performances of 1980s cinema. Led by the chemistry of Steve Martin and John Candy, John Hughes' Planes, Trains, and Automobiles remains a quintessential Thanksgiving classic. Expertly executed and very funny road movie that mixes physical, verbal, and situational comedy to memorable and highly likable effect. Mm-hmm. Critics 1-star reviews.
Critics 1-star. Critics 1-star reviews.
The movie falls into the trap of wimpy and bland sentimentality. Pretty dispensable. Yeah, I didn't agree with that either. Pretty dispensable. I'm going to disagree with you on that. The film does have its scattered moments, but too often the audience has as much reason as Dell and Neil to wonder, if anywhere, where are they going? I'm like, motherfucker, he's going home. He's going home, and he did it in an hour and a half. That's very well placed. That's a dumb observation this critic made. Where is he going? The film barrels along with a bumbling zeal, but it's comedy at its most predictable.
Yes. Mm. My review of the reviews is I liked Pretty Dispensable the best.
Amazon 5-star reviews.
Amazon 5-star reviews. Amazon 5-star reviews. Amazon 5-star reviews. Gutting power.
Our family goal is to watch it every year at Thanksgiving. This movie makes you laugh and also feel sad as you realize not everyone has family at the holidays. Use it as a lesson to reach out to those who may need family, in quotes. Oh, there's a more you know segment in the Amazon.
There's a PSA in this.
When I was in kindergarten, I had to perform a sing-song performance in front of all the parents. Kindergarten. Hannah McKay was my dance partner. At one point, we had to wear sombreros. Don't ask. Anyway, during dress rehearsal, I picked up my sombrero, but I didn't notice that Hannah's was attached to mine. The director of this performance laid into me. She yelled, "I did that on purpose, that I'm sabotaging her show." Again, this is a kindergarten performance, and I'm a bad apple doing all of this. I was embarrassed, traumatized, and felt like crawling into a hole and dying. The performance happened without a glitch, and we got a hearty applause. Anyway, this movie is a great buy.
That person is my favorite reviewer of all time. He just took us down a whole story.
That person, I'm gonna find that person and follow their reviews if that's possible.
Signed, there's your absurdist humor for you.
Signed, $50 copay to savings on a therapist. Next one, Megan from Maryland. I give this movie 5 stars and do sums up. It's awesome, fun, funny, family friendly, and cute. If you like Steve Martin and John Candy, you will love this movie. It's a classic. And if you like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you'll love it. It's a comedy that's fun and worth every penny. I recommend it. I would give it sums up and 5 stars again. And I would review it. And again, I think it's good, but I wouldn't put it in the top 10 for the top 20. I would put it in the top 50, but it's fun to watch. Looks like Megan from Maryland should change her name to Run On Rachel from Rhode Island.
That was also Megan's first draft, and she did not give it a second pass.
She didn't put punctuation in that. How about that, Casey? We love to watch this every year just before Thanksgiving. We are usually down at our condo, but this year, due to the pandemic, we didn't travel. So we just ordered another copy. Gotta have it.
Wow. What a bunch of rich bitches.
What, they were able to splurge on $5 and for
playing a second movie for their second home? Fuck you guys.
Amazon 1-star reviews.
Amazon 1-star reviews. Here come the Amazon 1-star reviews.
If you can't help but laughing when someone trips and falls down, you will enjoy this movie. A waste of a $4. And now Amazon's insisting I write at least 100 characters.
I love the bitterness. Yes.
That's like what the term that the professor goes, I said 500 words, and this clearly is 450.
Wait, the Amazon reviews have a minimum character count?
I just learned that two days ago.
Ridiculous.
You can't just write pretty dispensable on Amazon. You gotta go on and on.
You just sucks. I just can't write fuck this shit. I had forgotten about the profanity in this movie. For the most part, it was funny, but could not get past the profanity. Sad. But guys, this is why Bible bumpers are insane. One scene and they curse, because when they curse, they take it down to 1 star. They admitted it's funny, right? But they drop it down to 1 star because of one scene in curse. This is why I hate people and their agendas. Trash. Go ahead. You're about to say something, Casey.
No, that is my most hated critique, is that people don't like... People always... Here's a window into what it's like to be a woman in comedy. People will often say, I think you're very funny, but you swear too much.
Did not intend to buy it. Do not want it. Only wanted to watch it for $2.99. Please correct. John E. Sallow signed off on that. Well, John, congratulations. John, you are now the proud owner of a new film. And hey, all of our listeners, pretend you're from Amazon and email John and say, John, look at the mail. The check is in the mail.
Oh, my gosh.
Next one. My wife ordered it without me knowing. Could be worse movies, though.
You're supposed to run all the rentals by me.
I bet his wife orders him around too, from what it sounds. Next one. I want my 2 hours back. I say, well, next time, don't stare at a blank screen for 30 minutes after the credits roll, because this is an hour and a half movie, dumbass.
Touché.
I hate that they use God's name in vain. I turned it off. Signed, Luther Campbell. I had to throw a new one in there, Kevin Israel. Hey, Kevin Israel, did Casey St. Ange, excuse me, did Casey St. Ange gut the sacred cow?
I don't like where this is going.
See, this is why you make the big decisions at the end of the
podcast. Yeah, I don't like that you make me lead this off, because in my mind, she did. I agree with everything she said. But I just don't like the movie, so I think she did. But you're not going to agree, and then we're going to have to go to the
audience vote!
And then everyone's going to murder me, so...
It's okay. Kevin Israel, I think you and I have really similar sensibilities, and that's okay. That's what makes the world go round.
It is. We'll be
all right.
Horse racing.
You know, we'll says if right. some, you know, they say there's similar sensibilities, people who are wrong. Casey St. Ange, where can the world find you again? What are you up to? Shout it out.
I'm just, you know, on Twitter at KCCAISSIE. Don't tweet me if you want to say mean things to me about not liking planes, trains, and automobiles. Because every year I tweet that I don't like it and I stand by it and you can't hurt me.
Listen, don't say that. That's a challenge to our listeners. They will attempt to hurt you, I promise.
Now, I mean, listen, that says more about them than it does about me. I'm a parent. I have many of these platitudes loaded up and ready to
go. I'll come to your defense, Casey.
Thank you. And you can find me on Instagram at Instacase, and you can find me every Wednesday morning on Busy Phillips is Doing Her Best, wherever you get fine podcasts. We don't got any movies, but sometimes we got some things. And you know, so it's a, if you like gutting, you might happen across some gutting in that podcast. And then, just follow me on Twitter and I'll tell you about whatever next TV show I'm working on.
Kevin Israel.
You can find me at kevinisrael.com for all my dates. Some stuff is still rolling in. Taking a 2-month hiatus through December and January because I'm having a baby and I have to figure out how that thing works.
No, your wife is having. No, your wife is having a baby. You're not. You're
no,
not.
The wife is. The way we got here, I'm having the baby. and yeah. So like Kev said in the intro. Leave us a 5-star review and a rating, a 5-star rating and a review because it means something to us and we love it. And it also helps us with the crazy algorithm that we are constantly doing battle with. So leave us a rating and a review and we appreciate it.
And download this podcast for these guys that they're making for you. That matters as well.
Yeah.
Subscribe and download.
Yes. Thank you.
I love the cut of your jib, Casey. KevinGoatee.com, of course, NFL picks, as well as Instagram, Kevin Goatee, where you see my daughter doing the NFL picks every Sunday morning. And again, GuttingTheSacredCow.com as well for all those stuff before. Oh, yeah. And of course, dates as well, KevinGoatee.com. But yeah, GuttingTheSacredCow, all social platforms. Do us a favor, subscribe on YouTube. That really does help. And we hope to get a live show going on after Kevin pops the baby out of his uterus. So it's going to be a fantastic scene. I can't wait to see the video of that. And then, that's that. Thanks again, guys, for coming on the podcast. Casey, thank you so much for hanging out with us and standing very bravely on this. I know the fans love this film, so it's going to be quite the reaction. But again, I applaud your bravery and thank you for coming on. And we'll see you all next time. Take care.